Hey, everybody. If you're still listening to these, thank you so much. I appreciate every one of you for listening and downloading these and all of that jazz. This episode is a fun episode. This is one of the mildly interesting episodes that you can watch on Prohibited.com or Fire Stick or Apple TV. It's with a very great and talented writer, director, host, actor, Sean Stone. He's got a couple projects out that we talk about on the episode. Once again, thank you for listening to these episodes and downloading Today We Learned. And if you've been here from the beginning, I appreciate it. And if you're new, I appreciate you. It's tough to keep making things, and you second guess yourself with everything you do, and you see people come and go, and you wonder what you did, and whatever, I don't know. And I just appreciate everybody for sticking around or listening to these. New or old, I love you all. Without further ado, here's the audio version from Mildly Interesting on Prohibited.com. I don't know what episode this is. Today we learned something, but thank you for putting up with all of my bullshit and listening to my things. This is a fun episode. Check it out. With Sean Stone. Here we go. Welcome back to another episode of Mildly Interesting. My name is Razzle. Thank you all for joining us again today. We have a great guest, actor, writer, director, a fan of scary things in the occult, which we'll get into. Please give a warm welcome to Sean Stone.
Where's the clapping?
We're gonna add it in. This is literally just. It may look like we're on a set, but it's my bedroom right now, and I've been told to keep it down, so I need to keep the.
Where do you
my
sleep?
My mom's trying to sleep, so we gotta keep
vampire?
The applause.
Do you like hang upside down?
Sean, we like to, while everybody's listening in, where can everybody find you on the internet and social media, and if you're on all these things?
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm on Google. Your Venmo, if you want people to send you some things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can find me on
your
Venmo.
Amazon Prime wish list, if you're a porn star like they do.
Gifts, baby. I accept all gifts. Tips, gifts. Instagram, The Real Sean Stone. Twitter, Watching Sean. Facebook. Something, but my name is Sean Stone, so you can find me on Facebook. You can Google,
YouTube.
That's the best thing. I'm definitely available to fans. I love to get feedback and, hear from people. It's always, it's informative, I think, that discussion. I think social media has really helped us to become more connected, and I value that connection. I think a lot of people kind of shine it on. They're like, I don't have time for that. It's like, just make a little time here and there. You don't have to, engage with all the psychos.
Yeah, absolutely.
The psychos.
I mean, it's the internet is an interesting thing because it's broadened, especially social media. It's opens the doors for great connection. A lot of my friends now I've met through social media or through, podcasting.
And then Tinder.
Tinder, Bumble friends. There's so much benefit to it. But then there's also the climate right now where you have a lot of the, I hate to use the word because it's like epic. It's used so much, but the word toxic, there's a lot of negative on social media, but If you just look for the positives, you can really connect,
like,
and you just turn off the negatives, and it can be used for good.
Yeah, it's people ranting about the good. Millennials. They're like, the millennials are just, they're all, what's the word? Entitled. They're an entitled generation. They want everything easy, and they want this and that. It's like, first of all, you guys are born into this brain, you're brainwashed into the slave mentality for the first place, where it's like, nothing should be free. Everything has to be worked for and suffered and sweated. It's like, well, the universe is abundant and bountiful, and many cultures have all been sharing-based cultures for thousands of years until the white man came.
Yeah. You sound like Thanos right now, and I'm scared. Are you going to snap your fingers?
Did he say sharing-based?
I don't know, probably.
Gift-based cultures? No, I'm not talking about wiping people out. I'm saying Thanos is the white man that comes.
Well, because I would. I kind of agree with some of Thanos' aspects, but you're absolutely right. Is it not to cut you off, because, it's...
No, I'm the opposite of Thanos. I'm saying the universe is abundant. It's infinite. Thanos is saying it's finite.
True.
I don't believe the universe is finite at all. I'm the opposite.
You don't think we'll run out of resources at some point?
No, because humans create resources. I did a whole documentary called Century of War. It's coming out actually in September.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a date for that? Century of
September
War?
September 11th.
Okay. Oh,
Century of War, man.
And don't forget it.
It's an important documentary, and basically Gravitas is putting it out, so I'm not sure what platforms yet, but people will be able to find it on various places. And basically it's about how the universe is infinite, and we basically create resources. So right now we think that oil is our resource, and 100 years ago it was wood and coal. It could be, you know, nuclear thorium-based or uranium-based, or it could be hydrogen fuel cell. I mean, you can basically evolve. It could be some other free energy tech that could basically, so you evolve new technologies to apply it, and all of a sudden it transforms the aspect of resources. Right now we're using plastics. Plastics can be made biodegradable at the moment. They could, you know, we could replace it with other things like glass. But you know, the point is you evolve your technologies, and that then transforms our relationship to resources, including full recycling processes. So it's just the question of where human application of technology goes. That's what I believe in. I don't believe in anything being limited, because we're in a universe that is abundant.
Yeah.
And it's just the question of what we apply our knowledge and our technology to. At what point do we realize, oh my goodness, we can no longer go on because we're out of that resource. And then all of a sudden we apply the technology that transforms it. But until that moment, people are lazy. It's like, well, why should we go away from oil? Plus, oil is tied to our dollar, the petrodollar. So basically our entire currency is actually tied to oil, so the banks and the powers that be, the oil companies, don't want to see any kind of transition to a new energy tech.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, this is awesome. I could talk about this all day long, because, especially since I don't know anything about it and you're a wealth of knowledge here. It's, how does that, a lot of people, like, I say Monsanto, because that's the only company I know that makes genetically, you know, could, from what I've heard, they make genetically farmed foods and things like that.
Yeah, seeds, is fertilizers, that, things like
now,
that, yeah.
I mean, on the top of these chemicals in the foods, that sounds like a negative. But when you're talking about abundance and trying to solve world hunger and all of this, what are your thoughts on that? And how does that, do you touch on that type of food-based on your...
Don't get into the food-based aspect as much, because that really requires more agricultural thinkers.
Okay.
I mean, I think that when it comes to applying technologies and overall approaches to how you grow crops and whatnot, it's not so much... I mean, look, there's a lot of issues around the nature of agriculture in general. It's become very mass industrial produced, right? So you don't have the rotation of crops that used to go on when people were more in touch with the earth and understanding, like, you have to let, you know, certain products
change the crops so the ground can get the nutrients.
Exactly. The problem with Monsanto and these other companies is they're creating monocultures, where it's basically they're taking away species of seeds that's actually limiting our future by taking away varieties. That could, for example, you want more variety in life. That gives you more information, more knowledge, right? That's the whole point of like interbreeding, crossbreeding.
Yeah.
So the idea of limiting and restricting by planting the same kind of, you know, seeds and forcing farmers into that position where they have to basically, they're beholden to Monsanto, you're basically creating this sort of big agro, you know, conglomerates. And that's, I think, overall limiting the future viability. So we're gonna have to, in the future, have to go to GMOs. We're going to have to be, you know, go to these fertilizers and other things. But people are innovating, and I always hear about innovations when it comes to, like, you know, finding other things aside from fertilizers and chemicals for example, preventing weeds and preventing predators and
pesticides.
Stuff.
Pests.
So, you know, there are other alternatives that have always been used and could be used, but the problem is you're facing a mass corporate mentality, and the corporate mentality is always to mass produce and to basically limit out or restrict any competitors from that model. And that's what you end up with. It's just like this overall conglomeration. They end up with a new world order, which is basically just bigger and bigger corporations buying up the smaller corporations. And that model, I mean, ultimately, it makes the environment, it makes our bodies, everything more toxified. So we have to go back to more, I think, local grassroots organizations and communication to basically find ways of fighting that.
What do you think about, like, what Elon Musk is kind of doing with even, you know, sharing his, you know, like, when he released, what was it, the Tesla blueprints and all of the plans and patents, he put those out there so people could, and other companies could see these and reverse engineer or build on that.
Yeah.
Because in the end, we're all here together.
Yeah.
We're all going to die together in theory,
yeah.
You know, and unless we continue to share our knowledge, which is one thing, you know, it's... We limit that. It used to be a thing back in the day, I feel like, or maybe it was just, maybe I saw a documentary wrong or whatever, but where they would put, you know, think tanks of all these scientists to invent all this cool shit.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of like, we invent cool shit, but no, like it's all patents, everything, and we're almost preventing progress.
Yeah, and the patents are getting bought up either by government or by corporations that are tied to the government, and basically preventing breakthrough technologies from being formed. I mean, I think that's wonderful if Tesla, I mean, if the Tesla did that model was issued to the public.
Yeah.
Personally, I drive hydrogen. I think hydrogen is actually more effective for our future.
Than electric.
Than electric, because electric has a problem. Electric still ties you to the energy grid. So you have to go charge your car with electricity that's being generated from massive power plants. So you're okay. still tied to the same electric grid, whereas the hydrogen cell just runs on hydrogen and is
what kind of car do you drive?
Toyota makes it. Toyota
so is it you don't use gas at all?
No, it's hydrogen fuel. That basically means that it releases water. That's my emission.
How do you fill up? How do you get in your car?
There's only like a dozen stations in LA, so you have to plan it. You go to the station, so you fill up with hydrogen gas, and then you it's pretty cool. It's pretty
how
sci-fi
long does that last?
Actually. It's just like a tank. It runs 200 miles, 250 miles, and then you have to charge again. You have to recharge it.
And you fill it with hydrogen?
Hydrogen, yeah. And it's super cool, like a Terminator.
Just like that.
Very futuristic.
Hydrogen. So you think hydrogen's better than electric?
I do.
Even with like solar being like a predominant thing now?
Because you can't generate enough energy from solar. That's the problem all these guys are facing. I'm not a big believer in solar and wind because the amount of... First of all, you have to produce these things. That itself is energy-intensive process to build the solar panels, to build the wind farms. You know how many... You'd have to basically fill like all of North Africa with solar panels to generate enough energy for like a country in Europe.
I mean, Africa's big. Have you seen it?
I've been.
It's right over here, I think.
I've been, but you know, imagine that you're all obstructing other things. You know, because there's all these things are natural site, you know, processes. The desert wasn't, the Sahara wasn't always the Sahara. It's like you can also, we could also work against desertification. We could work, you know, work to spread, you know, rivers and to basically spread plant life and vegetation as much as possible. And we're not sure how long the desert's going to last. Again, it's going to shift. So you're talking about just filling all this desert land, which also has an ecosystem of its own, which is solar panels. To me, it's not effective. I'd rather see new innovations. I'd rather see fusion being enacted. I'd rather see thorium-based nuclear, which is actually a very clean one. If we deployed thorium nuclear right now, we could actually recycle the spent fuel that's sitting in these mountains that's toxic for the next 1,000-plus years. We could use that as a fuel source for thorium nuclear processes.
Now, you said thorium, you've mentioned that. I've never heard of thorium.
Yeah, it's in my documentary.
It's in the new documentary coming out.
The Century of War.
Century of War coming out in September. Thorium is, according to Wikipedia here, thorium is a weakly radioactive metallic chemical element with the symbol TH and the atomic number 90. Tarnishes black when exposed to air. All known thorium isotopes are unstable. So is this like a new...
The Indians in India...
Where did this come from? Because I've heard of plutonium.
Yeah.
I've heard of nitrogen.
Because it's been around. The problem was that the U.S. basically back in the 40s and 50s when it went to the nuclear arsenal, it wanted to use nuclear for the Navy. And so basically it deployed uranium-based nuclear. They could have gone to thorium, but you can't actually develop thorium nuclear into a bomb. So it actually separates.
So it's not weaponizable.
The United States doesn't care.
So
the Indians, for example, are very interested in thorium. And there's, you know, people I talked to in an interview in the documentary, they're like based in Switzerland. And, you know, they're the forefronts of science, but the mainstream, but science is politicized. And you have to understand, like when we read magazines or we read news, it's oftentimes being politicized in a way that's trying to push a certain agenda.
It's very interesting. I was just listening to Joe Rogan podcast. He had a scientist on there who's big into like Egypt and the pyramids and stuff like that. And
Graham Hancock.
Yeah, right. And he thinks he discovered that the Sphinx apparently is like 5,000 years older than everything else.
No, he didn't discover that. It was the geologists like Robert Schock and his partner that they wrote books on this stuff
but the
years ago.
Other science community has like blacklisted or persuaded.
Of course.
Which is interesting because. In the end, aren't scientists supposed to be all for facts and the good?
No, because
but absolutely,
they get
like
grants,
you just said,
if you want to work for a university, you want to be paid. Who sponsors universities? Corporations.
Yeah.
So there's a whole book called Hidden Archaeology, I think, by Michael Cremo.
Okay.
It's an amazing book. It gets into stuff like how are there like indications of like footprints and fingerprints and tool work from like 500,000 years old. Forbidden archaeology.
The Hidden History of the Human Race, 1993 book.
Because it basically destroys the Darwinian conception of us being 100,000 years ago monkeys that slowly evolved. It's like, well, there's indications of like of human tool making or some kind of being. I don't know if it's pre-human or what, but some kind of tool making and tool etchings. Like over from 500,000 years ago. So something was here. It was maybe not humans, it was aliens. It's Atlantean. Right. We got a picture of Atlantis here.
Do you believe in aliens?
100%.
Do you think we've been visited?
No, I mean, look, there's no doubt in my mind that we have been visited since the beginning, since before, and we are partly alien.
Yeah.
to this world.
I just ripped off of my face.
No, humans are not entirely, like, I don't believe that we naturally evolved on this
from
planet.
This earth. It's
consciousness itself is a question, is a problem that that science technically doesn't want to get into. And the soul, consciousness.
We're too, I mean, in theory, everything on this earth can kill us. You know, the cold, we're not, every climate, we get sunburned, we can get cold. There's no...
Especially white people. We have no business here.
no business. My SPF is 5 shirts. That's not what I need to wear. There's no real climate on this planet that is really suitable. Even in Michigan, you know, I have allergies. It's too humid. So there's no,
you know where I think we came? I think that the whites did come from Mars. I think the stuff,
specifically Mars, not some further out galaxy.
Oh, no,
like
we came from farther away.
Yeah.
Like Orion, Sirius, all this stuff. People have contacts with the Pleiadians, all this stuff, you know, I believe. But I'm saying that Mars is interesting because of the whole, you know, Cairo is Mars City. That's the meaning of Cairo.
Really?
And there's, you know, the indications of like pyramids. Some of the rovers have shown like images that could indicate
the face
and the pyramids and stuff like that. I wouldn't have no issue believing that Mars was once populated. There was, you know, there is a climate, but there was obviously more bearable. The water used to be plentiful on Mars.
Yeah.
And as the atmosphere shifted, it could have been worlds in collision, that kind of theory about comets or asteroids, or it could have maybe just been, who knows? I mean, maybe the humans, whatever it was, the humans at that time
destroyed themselves
and nukes. I mean, who knows how it happened? But I tend to think that, Mars could have been a port that could have inspired or communicated at one point with Earth.
It's definitely a interesting, you know, it gives more, whether or not, you know, religious or meaning or not, it gives more credence to this accident of life and inventing things. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like to go from, you know, I subscribe to evolution to an extent because I'm not, you know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, so I'll believe what smarter people tell me. Mm-hmm. You know, much like everything you're telling me, I'm taking it for, you know, I believe everything because I'm not as well read. But to think that, you know, apes evolved into us and now we're having, you know, cell phones and hydrogen cars, that's a huge leap for just, you know, cognition.
You have to believe. This whole fundamental problem to me is like this belief that the brain itself creates consciousness. It's just the brain.
Yeah.
And no, I have an issue with that because I believe in the soul, spiritual realm, different, you know, having, we dream, right? A lot of us have touched astral dimensions or realms, right? We have shared experiences, synchronicities, commonality of
deja vus, which are,
of spiritual experience that makes you start to really think, okay, there's more happening here, and this is more of a spiritual, we're having a spiritual experience in this physical form, but it's, you know, it's just one journey of our soul through many galaxies and lives and planets, and you know, that's why all that stuff to me is credible, even if some people may have delusions at the end of the day, but like it all comes from a fundamental truth.
It's very, very exactly, like touching on that, I used to think all of this, We're in a heyday of, you know, of purple rocks and magic and all this stuff.
New age.
And new age culture and mysticism.
Yeah.
And whether or not I scientifically believe in that or religiously believe in that or I've been here and reincarnated 1,000 times, there's something about the idea of positive vibes and negative vibes and Ghostbusters too. Like we're very in a, you know, especially right now with all the negativity going on with the Trump administration and just the world in general.
Yeah.
We're in a you know, a negative vacuum where, you know, negativity just breeds negativity and all that. Mm-hmm. And there's something about, you know, the earth. We know the earth is a ball of iron hurtling through space. Mm-hmm. And human beings are, you know, our brains have electricity, according to doctors. And when you mix electricity with iron, you make an electromagnet. Mm. So who's to say that the earth, with all of these humans and these fingers and these intricacies, aren't like an avatar type of symbiose that are just, you know, there's, who knows? But I can't technically knock it because I don't necessarily believe it. But also, 3,000 years ago, you know, Catholicism and Leo Galileo and all them thought, you know, the sun revolved around the earth.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, you'd have to get into electric universe theory, and that's, I would advocate anyone read up on it. Thunderbolts of the Gods, that kind of stuff. I just interviewed David Talbot, who's one of the chief promoters of that concept on my show Buzzsaw, which is on Gaia now. And Buzzsaw is, you know, fascinating interview program. We get into all these, talk about like everything from New Age to conspiracy to extraterrestrial experience, esoteric experience. And, you know, Talbot in particular is someone to check out in that whole issue of the electric universe, because basically our universe is electric and there's more like plasma is the fourth state of matter, right? It's electrically charged gaseous state. So this issue of like plasma discharges and actually like that sort of invisible realm, it starts to open up this whole thing about the paranormal aspect of things, where people all of a sudden see a phenomenon. Could it be like a plasma discharge, essentially, like appearing in a moment that we call phantoms or ghosts or spirits? And are they, you know, obviously plasma's all around us and surround, maybe it's even filling the space between planets, which are, as you say, electrically charged. So it gets into the whole thing about mythologies and how the ancient peoples believed that the planets themselves were beings, in a sense, like gods, the stars too. Like there was a, and there was a certain personality to each planet. There's a certain energy to it. When you're born into the sign of that planet and those stars, influences you electrically in a way. They didn't have the words to describe it, but it certainly could be the future of science. I always look at magic like magic is not something that we should dismiss or mysticism. We shouldn't dismiss it. We should just understand that maybe it's that understanding scientifically that we haven't yet reached because we are really just beginning to understand the world around us.
It's very, you know, especially, you know, to back to those gods things is, you know, without light pollution back in the day, you know, I mean, solar flares affect computers and everything. Who's to say there wasn't, you know, these electricity discharges from Mars or Jupiter or whatever.
Absolutely.
And in a to a blind eye, you know, to an unpolluted sky, you know, you would, I would think you would notice these changes in atmosphere. I mean, you go to any museum.
The observatory.
Yeah, the Griffith. Griffith, there we go. Griffith Observatory. They have a Tesla coil. And even in high school and in science classes, you know, you know, I used to have a taser in high school, you know, that I would, my friends and I would tase each other with, you know, because it's fun. And, but even that is like your electricity discharging and you do that in the air and you can smell the change in just the atmosphere around that.
Mm.
So who's to say, you know, I mean, even radio waves, you know, microwaves, we can't see. There's so many different rays and waves of electricity and of life that, you know, who's to say a ghost or whatever isn't just a electric discharge from us.
And it gets back to my first point, which is that we've been enslaved and brainwashed since birth into these conditions of this is the way you're supposed to see the world. It begins with religion, science, and government.
Yeah.
These three bodies that really compose the nature of our reality, and God forbid you ever question that or start to think outside the box, even going back to the ancient times, because that's all past. Those people were less sophisticated. They were ignorant. They had no conception of how to live. And yet, they might have actually, you know, obviously, well, we know with Egypt and other pyramids across the world, by the way, you know, the pyramid in Teotihuacan is the third largest in the world. They have these tremendous buildings, and no one still can figure out how exactly they built
it. They built them.
So, you know, we're really going to dismiss those cultures as just being ignorant and backwards. They might have been much more in tune with the universe than we are.
Well, what I like Rome had heating and cooling systems. You know, there was
sewage and
there was a movie. I think it was Hugo or something, where it's like the robot. It was a kids movie that came out not too long ago, and when that came out, I fell down the Wikipedia blue link rabbit hole. And they had like in Greece in ancient times, they had robots. They had like these mannequins and these statues that had clockwork like gears hidden inside, and they could move and things like that. And then you know, you look at the Colossus statue that's over the entrance, and it's like, come on, you can't tell me this primitive human beings were that undeveloped mentally when they've built these structures that we can't even.
Well, that's why energy is the central issue. Energy is power. Power is power. Power is control. Why are we running on this oil grid, essentially? It's like, and the roads and everything is designed to structure us and control us.
Yeah.
And if you actually start to go beyond those technologies and start to get breakthrough energy tech, which has been achieved and oftentimes suppressed, many scientists threatened and killed, and inventors, you know, as we know, have come out, but always, you know, ridiculed. If you ever hear about it, it's always, oh, that's pseudoscience.
Yeah.
But why is it so scary? Why is it so scary to actually bring these into real conversation? If you bring cold fusion in 89 or 9, when 89, I think it was 90, when these guys came out and these were real, you know, Stanley Fleischman and Pons are, you know, tremendous electrical engineers, real scientists who are doing cold fusion, and they're achieving something, and then all of a sudden they're not quite sure how it works. They're like, listen, we don't understand the science of it. We're achieving something. And then they get ridiculed because you don't know how it works. So that's not real science and that's a hoax and blah, blah. But it's like, no, there's something going on that we have to respect. But the system doesn't want you to think outside of that box, because then they lose control of you, which is your control begins, like I said, from birth. You're in debt. You're taxed. You owe. You know, it's always a sense of like you owe someone for being alive, as opposed to no. Actually, you're part of the ecosystem. We are part of nature. We're humans. We have a right to be here and place here. Everyone has a place here. We should, you know, celebrate every human life instead of looking at it like a pest to be, you know, to basically be enslaved to the system for the rest of their life.
I mean, I will say the bird scooters are pests. Have you seen these? These new scooters everywhere. They're
well, they're not real birds.
Littered everywhere. and we're talking about all of this, you know, science and religion and all this. How is, according to Wikipedia here, you converted to Islam. Is that
I
a thing?
Accepted Islam, which or is you accepted, to say,
because that's simple. An interesting thing. While we're talking about, because I'm not religious at all, and I subscribe to all this, but I have friends who are very religious, and they're less inclined to subscribe to open-mindedness. Not that I'm negative. I'm not being negative to them.
Right.
I don't teach their own.
To me, it's a very simple thing. Islam is when you accept Islam, it means that you accept that the Prophet Muhammad is a prophet.
Okay.
In a lineage, and all the Quran is a lineage of Abraham, Moses, Joseph. You know, Ishmael and Isaac, all these prophets that came before, they're written about in the Old Testament, which you know, I've read most of, whereas like a lot of people talk about religion, they never even read the books. Yeah. They don't even know what they're talking about.
They quote the two lines of Leviticus.
Exactly. It's like they don't know. They've never actually read these books. They haven't studied religion. So I say, look, I'm studying religion. I don't consider myself an expert. I love studying religion. And I've read the Quran. And I think Muhammad, yes, absolutely was a prophet in the lineage. And why are we arguing about this? He's part of the Judeo-Christian tradition. Like, let's end this stupid bickering. There's nothing to fight over. You guys are all part of the same family. It's like two cousins saying, you know, my dad is better than your dad. I mean, you're the same lineage.
Yeah. I mean, that's why like I love doing the show and I love talking to people because maybe I knew this prior, but it didn't really dawn on me until I was looking this up and that they are the same God in theory.
Like they're, in 100%, it's just different
And I
names.
Didn't realize that. I heard, you know, when I think of like, again, whether or not I selective heard it and just turned it off, I always thought like Islam and Muhammad were different.
No.
Was a different, like a Buddha was a
you
different type of religion,
it,
but it's all the
if
same
you study
core.
Religion, remember the Romans, they changed the gods' names. Remember the Greeks called it like Zeus and who was Aphrodite and
Mercury. Mercury was Roman, right?
Exactly. So that was the Greeks and the Romans came and Zeus became Jupiter.
Okay.
And Hera became, who's the wife of Jupiter? Blanking on that one, but Aphrodite becomes Venus, and you know all these basically these
Juno.
Gods, Juno, sorry,
a daughter of Saturn. She is the wife of Jupiter and the mother of Mars, Vulcan,
exactly.
Bellona, and Juventus.
So these are all this, you know, the same gods. They just changed their names. That's all. I'm sorry, Juno becomes Hera. That kind of Hera. Yeah. That kind of thing. It's just the transition of names. So two different cultures, but again, Arabic, you know, Aramaic. You have to go back closer to the source. You know, dialogue, and essentially, again, it comes from that same tradition. And the fact is, Muhammad basically, you know, says the Kaaba is the center of our practice. You know, the Kaaba is the home of Abraham, who's the father of Judaism.
I did not know that.
Yeah, because they're trying to keep you divided.
Isn't that weird? How does that? Who does that benefit? Who does the division benefit?
Anyone?
Where, do you know what I mean? Like
every empire is based on division. I mean, how do you make money? If I don't have, I have to have a separate church, you know. So if I set up my separate church, then you'll come to my church, and then I can have to have. If I have a church, I have to have an enemy. You know, it has to be another church that you don't want it. Whether it's you know the Baptists fighting with
Catholicism
the other, you know, whatever, like
the
Catholics,
the Lutherans,
hammer. Let's be honest. People love to have division. Don't go to his church. You know, he's a Satanist. He has snake worship in his church. Come to my church. I mean, that's what it is.
But isn't it an obvious thing that if we, like, much like business and everything, if every country, if we all work together, we could, because there's, back to space travel, isn't there, like, there's three theories, I think, about how the aliens or whatever, like, there's planetary, interplanetary, then, like, intergalaxy travel or something, intergalaxy. And in order to really be interplanetary, you need to have like a one government society, I think, because to reach that culmination of advancement, you almost need everybody either being told what to do or working together. So wouldn't that, like, to me, it's like if, you know...
Yeah, in a sense. I mean, do we want to get to that place of a one world government? I don't know yet. I don't know that we're ready, but I do think that we have to become intergalactic, that's for sure, because we are so... caught up with the petty things in this life as opposed to realizing how great we are actually, like how amazing. And, you know, we are divine. Every one of us is a reflection of God. We're perfect. We're just traumatized.
Yeah.
Basically, everyone is traumatized from past lives, from childhood, and you name it. I mean, every child comes in and like they're so bright. Not every, some of them are definitely carrying dark stuff from past, I think, past soul lives. But there's like this sort of this brightness, this creativity, this curiosity. And then it's like, oh, you just failed your test. Oh my God.
A letter grade, yeah.
Now you're, you know, let's devalue, let's degrade. Yeah.
He's hyper in class, let's feed him some drugs to keep.
Exactly. Like let's, you know, basically like let's conform them into the, this is, I know you guys want to play, but you have to make money. That's all that matters now, making money. And it's like, well, let's be honest, everyone has value to bring to the world if we honor their creativity and their loves and their passions. But it's like we basically suppress our loves and our passions.
I mean, I know a couple of people that seem to not bring any value to the world.
You think so?
I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously in jest, but there are some, like, I mean, there are some evil people who... Is that evilness a value? I guess does the outcome create a value? Do you know what I mean it's like the Joker in The Dark Knight? You know, is that in order to have a society of goodness and value, do you need that constant 100%. Of
the devil is God's greatest agent?
Yeah,
best agent for you. The best challenge for the soul is to see evil and see where you stand in relationship to it, and what for you is the line. The problem that we get into, I think, are systems. Systems themselves are so corrupt and evil that we actually become indifferent to the system. And then we basically don't like the person. So it becomes the president's the problem. This guy's the problem. That guy's the problem. Without understanding that the entire system itself is designed, just like a corporation or whatnot, is a dead body.
Yeah.
It's a corporation is a zombie walking around, and it just replaces, you know, some parasite to take over the head.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that guy's the problem. Let's change him. But you don't realize that it's the zombie itself that's walking around that's eating people.
Yeah. That's actually a good analogy. I mean, even especially for governments, you know, how they, you know, and so division is, it's your, you know, you're this sentient being, you know, or non-sentient being, and you're just filling in the somebody behind the controls who's...
Precisely. Who's just really just the puppet of that machine. And sometimes, like with Trump, I love the fact that he's causing, catalyzing change that I don't think could have happened with anybody else.
There's definitely the wake up call that some of it's, you know, some of it could be good, some of it can be bad. Look, I mean, all, personally, my stocks have never been higher, but I open the news and it's like, these negative things, and it's like, man, this sucks. But then, things need to suck before there can be a wake up call of people being like, we need to outrage and change.
You know, the thing with Trump, he pisses them off because people like to be lied to.
Yeah.
This is something that, you know, you understand in the entertainment business, you understand in, like, the nature of human psychology is people love to be lied to. They love a good BS artist, someone who just tells you, you're the best, you're great, I'm going to change the world, I'm going to do everything you want to hear, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I like that guy. Trump's the guy that doesn't care. You're fat. You're ugly. Yeah.
And they don't like him because they're not, because he's got no filter.
You know, I kind of respect that, and respect him more than politicians who BS their way through life, and they're all over the world, you know, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, I mean, that's, you know, that's clearly, especially when you have a broken system or, you know, the zombies going forward like we have since, you know, the beginning of our democracy. You know, you have these two parties or these three parties, and then they're back to two parties. And they're so cookie cutter and the same and the same. When you get that negative or that evil, whether or not you want to call Trump evil or negative, and you get that person who's just this new, I don't give a shit. I'm gonna say what it is.
The storm.
Fake news. Fake news. And calling everything out, whether or not it's true or not, he's just saying nonsense.
Yeah, but a lot of it.
And it's such
a lot of nonsense, like Alice in Wonderland. Sometimes it's the nonsense that actually gets to the truth.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of gives you the best reflection of your system and yourself.
Now you're clearly a well knowledgeable, you know, adventure explorer, learned, you know, trying to better, you know,
learning.
Better
mankind. I'm always learning.
Learning, always learning, which is you should always be learning, and I agree with. But you're also, when you're not making documentaries about how to save the world and change the world, you're a writer, director, and actor as well, right? So you just you wrote Fury of the Fist and the Golden Fleece. For Comedy Dynamics, which came out previously in May.
Yeah.
And it's a comedy. It's like a B comedy movie. Let's talk about
totally.
That. Let's talk about that.
Because
the list, I'm going to pull up the list of IMDb. It sounds like, I mean, you want to talk about like the Avengers or the Expendables or whatever. This is
the B movie.
This is
Expendables.
The B movie Expendables. Yeah. And I'm jealous I'm not a part of it. And if you do a sequel, I want to be a part of it.
Please.
Because I love action movies, and I perfected my Tom Cruise knife hands run.
Oh, my
goodness. I'm great at running with knife hands.
You have to play Tom Cruise then.
I will. Can well, I?
We just have you run through the scene.
Just doing
just
this.
Just running through the scene.
I will do that. Every scene. I'm just me. There's a video on YouTube of him, of all the movies he's ran in. And it's like 18 minutes long.
I think that was just, I saw the trailer for the next Mission Impossible. And I think I saw about 8 minutes of it.
8 minutes of him just running, which is why, you know, a movie you were in with Tom Cruise is my least favorite movie because he wasn't running the entire time.
He was in a wheelchair.
He was in a wheelchair. Born on the 4th of July. You were in that movie. Your dad directed it, right?
I was briefly in the film. I was in the opening credits playing guns with the kids. You know, I was 4 years old. So we're playing guns and, you know, cowboys and Indians in the backyard in the opening sequence. That was a fun shoot, actually. That's where you get to give me a gun. Let me go play guns with my friends.
And how old were you when you were doing that?
Four.
Four.
Yeah.
And you've been in a bunch of your dad's films, right?
As a kid, I was just doing cameos and, you know, Jim Morrison, young Jim Morrison in The Doors was the coolest role, and the best role was young Jim Garrison's son.
The young Lizard King.
And then JFK playing Kevin Costner's son was the biggest role. That was a few scenes of dialogue, which was cool, interacting with him and Sissy Spacek. But yeah, I mean, the young Jim Morrison, we played homage in The Fist, you mentioned The Fist, because we paid homage in the diner scene when I have a fight with Tiny Lister from Friday, who played Debo, right? And behind me, there's a great poster of The Doors. And his hair is kind of like Mike Herr in the movie. It's like this big fake wig.
Now, I'm going to roll through this cast, and then you can talk about the inspiration, because you wrote this and you starred in it, right? Danny Trejo, Jason London, Bill Goldberg. They're talking about... I grew up watching WCW Monday Night. Who's next? Bill Goldberg.
He says that line in the movie.
He has to.
Who's next?
He has to. Bianca Brigitte Van Damme, Jean-Claude's daughter.
Yep.
Ron Jeremy, Richard Grieco.
Love
21
it.
Jump Street. I got a story about Richard Grieco while I'm going on here. When I first moved out to LA, my buddy lived up in North Hollywood, and there was a place called Rocco's. It was like a little pizza place or whatever. And we would go to that a lot. And one time we were walking in and there was kind of like a line to get in or whatever. And this guy, this is late 2000s. So this is maybe 7 years ago, 8 years ago. So 2010,
okay.
You know, still present day current, enough for, he had like frosted tips, short hair. He had like a weird beaded wallet chain. He had like weird ripped up jeans.
It's like a 90s look.
Like he didn't leave the 90s. Like he had a time machine and I was going to ask where it was. And we're hanging out and, back then, I had a long handlebar mustache.
You
which
did.
Which I did. So I can't make fun of his looks because my looks were atrocious. I mean, also, I go by Razzle, so I really can't say anything. But he was, we were in line and we were joking around or whatever. And he turns around and he said, he goes, Richard Grieco. He introduces his full name for me, first off, which who does that? You don't say Sean Stone, you just say, hi, Sean, right?
Yeah, unless you said your full name, then obviously...
Well, I said, my name's Razzle, and he's like, Richard Grieco. He gave me the full name. And then I said, yeah, I know who you are. He turns to the person he's next to and says, he knows who I am. For real. For real. Richard Grieco, 21 Jump Street. Sam Jones.
That was the end of the conversation?
Yeah, then we walked in the bar. Ernie Reyes Jr. from Ninja Turtles.
The original, not the new one.
Tommy Davidson.
Tommy Davidson, Living Color, Matt.
So you wrote this movie.
Great cast. Yeah.
How did you get this movie made and get all your get the cast? Was it to go from what we were previously talking about?
Yeah.
Which is obviously similar mentalities where I think this is awesome and it's great.
Yeah.
And I can talk about, aliens and conspiracies and,
it's all in there.
Because your dad's a very political person as well.
Yeah.
And you seem like you're cut from the same cloth with out there ideas and just learning and but then again you can go and make
something totally romp. It's like a Rocky Horror Picture Show, Austin Powers, that kind of style. Look, I mean, there's a part of me that just loves comedy and has, it's just a sense of humor about everything because God knows we're in a society and we're in a time that, people, I think everything has been talked about and it's just like people are being berated to death with reality. Let's get a little bit of a sense of humor going. We need to let go. It's like almost like stress relief,
Yeah.
If you don't laugh and joke about this stuff, I feel like people are going to crack up.
Well, like they say, laughter is the defense mechanism,
Right.
You got this set up and you're like,
Yeah. And so when I wrote that, I mean, it came from a place of, I love like the 70s, 80s action heroes, Chuck Norris, Van Damme, Stallone, Schwarzenegger. Those are the movies I grew up on. So I'm like, that's cool. Like, let's make a character that's
who would have been in a fight? Hutch from Predator or John Rambo, given 3 hours of head start time in the woods?
You know, I can't say because I don't want it to be, you know, I don't want to call out who's better, Bettina Stallone and Schwarzenegger. I mean, they're both such badasses.
Great,
to me, like, Schwarzenegger was my favorite just because he was like the epitome. I mean, Conan was my, you know, my dad wrote Conan, right, with Milius, and like, I loved that movie, and that was like, I want to be like Schwarzenegger one day. Right? To me, it's like the perfect body, right? This guy is just perfection.
And then even you know, Stallone got chiseled for Rambo 3.
Rambo 3, I mean, I don't know how many steroids he was on. I mean, geez, he was definitely competing.
Zero body fat.
He was competing with Schwarzenegger.
Zero body fat, all the steroids.
That's the funniest.
Has to be.
The funniest thing is, like, I think my dad wanted to do Planet of the Apes originally in
92,
93.
I love that franchise.
Period. And he was kind of interested in looking at it, and he was talking to them both, and he's like, so he's talking to like Stallone, he's like, so Arnold's gonna play the Charlton Heston character, because Arnold is the new Charlton Heston, and you're gonna play the ape. Stallone went nuts. He went crazy, screaming, yelling, raging. I'm like, I was outside the office and I was just listening, and I was like, so I feel like someone's about to go to a fight inside that office.
Yo,
right,
Cornelius.
Now, you know? Because he was like, I'm not going to play the ape. He plays the ape.
Man, there's a dream movie right there.
That would have been a cool movie.
There's a dream movie.
But yeah, just, you know, obviously it wasn't going to work at the time. Too much ego.
Yeah.
But yeah, so as far as, you know, the idea of like melding that into a character and then just taking the character lightly, realizing, look, I'm not a martial arts guy. I don't need to be like the next action hero. I can have fun with this guy. This Fist character is ridiculous. All he does is drop one-liners, and he's a former porn star. But we're going to give nice political commentary because there's something about that time period. It's like set in the 80s, and it's got that vibe that I love of like people dressing the way they want. They have an attitude. You know, you get a little bit of it in New York, but most of our culture now is so self-conscious. It's like, oh my God, you might be criticized for saying that or doing that. In our movie, you're like, we say and do, and if we offend everybody, I hope you walk out there offended at some point, because you have to be offended if you want to move the dialogue forward. You can't be so self-censoring in our life, world.
It's
scary.
They just released, the HBO just did that that movie, Fahrenheit 451 or whatever, and you know, they talk about censorship in that movie and what the idea of the original story was, and it's such a current thing we're in.
It is.
Where we're such a self-censoring.
We already burned. You don't have to burn the books. They're digitized.
Digitized.
I keep a library because I love having a library. Yeah. It's like I love paper, but like it's all digitized.
Digitized.
The bookstores are all out of business.
Words and things you can't even say without causing outrage. You can't even bring up dialogues about things happening in culture.
Right. Well, when they say like you can't read Huckleberry Finn because he uses the N-word.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't erase history. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I agree with you. Like, yes, we're not going to, let's say, use that anymore.
We're not going to throw out that word. But
let's understand the context. Let's understand how we get to that place. If we can't study history, if we can't understand the language, the nature of, look, in the 1950s, you watch Marilyn Monroe and Bus Stop. I love it. This movie, man, this chick is getting thrown over her shoulder by the cowboy. He's like, you're going to be my girl. I'm going to take you home with me. And he picks the girl up. She's like, he's kidnapping her. He throws her over his shoulder. He throws her on the bus, kidnaps the girl. And he gets away with it. He ends up with her. I mean, it's so ridiculous. And you think, my God, I mean, this is 1959, 60,
not
probably
that long ago.
56, maybe 57. It's not long ago. So to understand, like, we have to read our history. We have to study history. We have to understand cultural changes. And ultimately, there is a truth to these things, even if we don't like it, even if it makes us uncomfortable. We have to face it.
You have to face the past, and that's the only way you can learn and progress as a culture. And censoring, you know, making it seem like it's never existed will only help it happen again in the future. You know, like you can't
repeat. It'll repeat.
You know, there was back to your the one-liner in Fury. I was talking to my buddy last night, and he said that for Big Trouble in Little China, Kurt Russell apparently either he knew how to do kung fu or whatever beforehand for like taking classes or whatever, but Jack Burton in Big Trouble was supposed to be this like karate master. But then when he did the auditions and when he was working on the movie, they decided it's funnier if he's like this hero who doesn't do any and is literally just, how can we get a joke line here and there?
Absolutely. Yeah, you want to have, you know, movies, to me, it's like there's this sort of larger than life quality. Yeah. There's something that takes us out of our reality, and I'm put off, especially the post 2000 era where reality kind of sunk into movies and became about realism, and it was always about like how realistic and like realism, yeah. We live our reality. Yeah. We live our life every day. We understand reality TV shows are not reality. They're heightened. They're heightened realities. Sometimes they're staged realities. Movies, that reality TV shows are more larger than life than movies now.
Yeah.
In a way, like movies, like hardly go there.
That's why I love like the Fast and the Furious.
Aside from the fantasy, which is why people love it, because it just takes you out of.
It's a complete escapism.
But aside from that, it feels like everything has to be so realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. Even the TV, as much as I love like TV, you know, aside from like Game of Thrones or like Westworld, you know, you had Breaking Bad and you have all these shows and they're very like, how do we make it real?
Mm-hmm.
Like even, you know, some of the Batmans was like, as much as I love the Chris Nolan Batmans, it's like, how do we make it real? And it's like, he's Batman. I kind of don't want him to be real. I want him to fight a giant clay monster, you know?
That's the tradition of movies. It was always larger than life. It was always heightened, you know, situations and a sense of, you know, playing things up. Because you understand, you're having an experience. You're going and you're having an emotional experience, and it's a catharsis. You know, it's like Shakespeare. This is not real. Now it's just so much emphasis on the reality of things that it kind of dulls the movies to me.
It's, you know, there's a reason why, you know, those, you know, the Michael Bay Transformers movies,
they appeal to
make billions of dollars.
They appeal to people.
You know, because you want that escape. You know, especially.
But they also appeal to China because they don't speak English. They have to suffer through the dialogue.
Well, now they have, you know, four. Well, especially when they have the major set pieces take place in China.
Well, that too, but I'm saying mostly they have to deal with the dialogue.
I mean, it's, you know, The Rock was a good movie.
The Rock?
The Rock was a great movie. That was Michael Bay, right?
Sheesh, man. Now you're going to ancient history, you know. People, like, you talk to people, like, I talk to, you know, people nowadays, like, The Rock, they're like, that's an old movie. I'm like,
isn't that wild?
I talk about old movies. I mean, I'm talking like 30s and 40s.
Isn't that wild? Yeah, like we're 90s in such a, you know, Netflix culture where anything over
sad.
12
Netflix
years.
Scares me, man. I mean, it really scares me because they're so about quantity, and then I'm trying to find like old classic films, and it's just like I got to go to other servers, or just go to. I go to a video store occasionally, just to, like, hey, I can't
those
find
are
it anywhere.
Still around? Where do you where?
Hey,
where's a video store?
There's one right next to the Rocky Horror Picture Show on New Art, you know, in Santa Monica. They got the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh yeah, what is that?
Late night. I love those. Like they have the movie theaters, late night movies, midnight movies. It's like it's great to have those little theaters that are boutique. The Arrow in Montana. Respected so much that they have. I went to see Lawrence of Arabia recently on like 75mm print. It's just like, wow, going to watch a movie on the big screen, an old one that holds up, nothing like it.
It's, well, and those movies too, like they're long, but they give you, they're not quick cuts. They give you the time to actually embrace the,
you know,
the storytelling.
Longer? You know what's longer? A TV series. Try sitting around for 12 hours trying to watch this TV series. I can't get through like 2-3 episodes. I'm like, I'm done.
It's because they're all filler episodes.
Please, let me out of here. 2 hours, 3 hours movies. I can walk away. I can go to sleep. I don't have to sit here for 16 hours just to get through one season and wait for another year to get. It doesn't make sense.
You shouldn't need 12 hours to tell a good story.
And most of those shows don't need that much time. They drag on with characters you didn't care about in subplots. You're like, why am I watching this for 12 hours? I'm going to cut to the chase.
Your first directing writing was Greystone, correct?
Greystone Park, yeah.
A movie about the Greystone Park Psychiatric Hospital, formerly known as the State Asylum for Insane at Morristown, built in 1876 in New Jersey. It was one of the first lunatic asylums.
Yeah.
And you made a movie about going there and finding haunted stuff, right? What's that movie about?
They didn't find any hot chicks in there.
They didn't find any hot chicks because, from what I understand, I haven't seen it, but it's you are have an affinity for like the occult and things like that.
I love this stuff, man. I'm looking around. I'm like, this is kind of like my bedroom now.
Did you
too heavy? But yeah, no. I was really interested in magic. I was getting into magic and paranormal. I never had real experience. I studied history at college. Yeah. I was like, I studied things. And I'm like, okay, why are these thinkers and philosophers talking about the spiritual realm? Like, I never had my own experience. I never saw a UFO before that.
Yeah.
After that, sure, but that was a gateway drug for me. Going to that mental hospital, which was just massive. It was energetically charged. We went there multiple times for incursions, had so many cool experiences. I'm looking to put out the real footage eventually because that would be awesome. I have like cut it together, but like the real experiences that I had. Because I fictionalized it in Greystone, which was me playing myself, documentary style. People said, oh, it's found footage. I said, it's not found footage. I never said I died at the end of this. I never pretended like it was real. I just said it's a documentary style movie, dramatization. People didn't understand that. It was the wrong timing. But I hope to put out the real documentary footage and let people see what I went through.
So for of the actual like behind the scenes.
The actual like
what was it like?
Demon
was
possessions, it... phone calls from 666 numbers,
shut up.
Screams, devils laughing. I mean,
this all happened while you were there.
Losing insane. Yeah, there. I mean, I went to multiple locations. I went. They came home with you, and they came home with us sometimes. Yeah.
That's so wild. So you, I mean, you love abandoned.
No, I love. Look, I just. At that time, I was fascinated. This is pre-2012.
Okay.
Post-2012, I haven't been as fascinated by the spiritual paranormal realm because I think I just I believe.
Is it afraid of what it can do, or are you just
it's a sense like you initiate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you initiate and you understand it. It's like going hunting or something for the first time, and when you first go hunting, you're like, there could be animals, and then you start to hear things, and you're like, I don't know how these animals behave, right? Yeah. There's every animal has a different behavior. So that's what it was like going into this realm of, okay, is there something walking there? And then you start to trust your own inner instincts. Yeah. You start to realize we have innate spiritual connections, and I can, you know, it's like using the force. You start to sense it, and you start to use it, and you start to realize, okay, you know what, if I calm my energy and if I put my faith into a higher place and raise my vibration into a place of love and light, all those things dispel very quickly. But at first, that was fear. So when I'm operating in fear, then all of a sudden the activity gets stronger. And next thing you know, it's like it's following you. And then you're tied into that relationship with these externalizations of your own fear, actually. It's all real, but it's also an externalization of you.
Because
everything you experience is reality. Yeah. It's all your reality. It's everything I'm experiencing is my consciousness having this experience, and a lot of it mostly is the unconscious mind, which we don't have control of. It's like the conscious is like the surface of the ocean. The unconscious is how deep the ocean goes, as we know. Can you imagine? We don't know where the end is. That's our unconscious.
James Cameron's been down there.
He's supposedly you know, the abyss.
One of three people that's been down to the bottom.
That's what we're talking about here. I mean, we don't know where, how deep, because really a mile deep, you're starting to now start finding species of sharks that no one even knew existed, with like the red eyes.
20 years ago, they said the giant squids were not a thing.
Giant squids and
now
things.
Now they're washing up on shores.
Woof, like super, super,
you want to talk about an escape movie, that Megalodon, the Meg comes out. I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, giant shark, but it's like, that's exactly it. Is, you know,
Jason Statham versus Jaws.
Exactly.
Mega Jaws.
Ruby Rose as a shark scientist. I can't wait. It's very, you know, the ocean, we have so, it's, you know, that's a very good analogy, because it's like we don't know anything about our brain as much as we think we do. And same with the ocean. We have no clue what's, you know, how deep it goes. I mean, we have an idea for like dropping, you know,
the
pings
mind.
And things like that.
Exactly. But the mind is so infinite, and that's why I love it. It's like the imagination, that realm. I think art is going to save humanity.
Yeah.
Creativity is going to save humanity.
Speaking on the mind and consciousness and all that, while we wrap up, and since we're, you know, on a network called Prohibited, which is of the culture and all that type of stuff, back to what we were talking about with realms and things like that, I have friends who've done mushrooms and things like that, and they've... Have you ever done like a mushrooms or anything
ayahuasca
like that?
Ayahuasca, I love.
Ayahuasca? And you,
it's amazing.
It's amazing. And that's helped you broaden out and...
No, it was just I needed it at certain times in my life to sort of...
And that's a tea. Ayahuasca is a tea?
Yeah, I mean, some people do it every weekend.
Have you done it with really... Did you do it properly with the shaman?
Absolutely.
And all that?
Yeah, you have to do it in the right condition with the shaman leading it. And it's calls to you. It's like there's a certain... Again, it's an initiation. It's a moment in your life to trigger certain awareness, to recognize, okay, I'm on my path.
Yeah.
Maybe to face certain demons or things you need to confront or visualize. But you shouldn't be addicted to these things. I mean, drugs should not become an addiction or a habit. It's about initiation. It's like you go in, you prepare yourself, you go through something, and then you come out with a new consciousness into a place of reflecting. But trust that your own mind, your own body is giving you indication signals always. Like it's just the drugs are there to remind you, oh, I can trust my intuition. I can trust my unconscious and my body to guide me, because the universe is telling me what I need to know if I'm just willing to listen.
And ayahuasca helps...
Just remind. It gives you a reminder.
A reminder of that.
Yeah, and sometimes it gives you certain awarenesses of saying, "Hey, pay attention to this. Look at that. Recognize something." But again, you shouldn't make it a habit, because then you become lazy. It's like having a psychic advisor. Oh, I'm checking my psychic every day to find out if I should get out of bed this morning.
Yeah.
No, you need to trust yourself and listen. The universe is always communicating to you, regardless. If you see a birds fly or something, that it might trigger something in you. If you listen to it, be aware of your emotions, your feelings. If someone says something to you, be aware maybe that person's telling you something you need to pay attention to.
It's really cool. I've never done it, but I have friends that it's like I'm part of it is like the shrooms and the ayahuasca. I have, you know, my friend Shane did a documentary about it, and it's very interesting because it's you know, we're all in tune, as we mentioned, yeah. You know, and it's you know, it's one of those things, like, I've never touched the Ouija board because there's that fear, that negative,
it's a portal, man. It's a doorway. It's,
you know, it's a dark portal.
It's a doorway. You know how to open the door, but you know how to close it.
That's the thing. It's like all those things are ways to open.
Yes.
But there's no way to, you know, there's no, nobody talks about closing it. It's all like, let's test the waters, let's adventure, but there's no way of wrapping it back up. Do you, have you ever smoked marijuana? Do you do marijuana?
Do I do it?
Do you do marijuana?
Do you do the Duke?
Do you do the Duke?
Yeah, I'm not like, you know, to me, marijuana not is your like, choice, I go to sleep with marijuana. You know, if I'm hanging out with someone, I'm like, I want to smoke a joint, I'm probably going to pass out.
You'll pass out.
So to me, my drug of choice is probably chocolate and maybe like a glass of tequila or something.
Yeah.
But that's about it. You know, coffee is a great drug of choice.
What kind of chocolate?
Dark.
Oh, dark. It tastes dark. Like it's burnt. Give me milk chocolate.
That's what gives you, that's what the healthiest though. Like, you want the cacao. Like, that's,
is it?
That's the best part for you. The milk is, don't drink milk.
Don't drink milk.
That's my advice to kids. Don't drink milk.
Don't drink milk.
Don't trust what they tell you. It's all a scam. Do not drink milk. You know, coconut, almond, like, that's okay, but do not drink milk from a cow unless it's raw, fresh from that cow. Like, the whole, it has to be raw. Otherwise, it's pasteurized, it's diluted, it's not good for you anymore. Don't drink it.
Dead. Don't drink it. You've heard it here first, MTV News. Sean, thank you so much for doing the show. Everybody, thanks for watching and listening. Once again, tell everybody where they can find you on social media and any where they can find Fury in the Fist and your documentary again coming out, if you know. Or anything you want to show.
The Fury in the Fist sounds like the agony and the ecstasy. Now, Fury of the Fist and the Golden Fleece is available on all the streaming places, Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube. You can, you know, rent it for a couple bucks. God forbid you, you know, pay $3 to watch a movie. It's a good time. It'll get your friends together. It's definitely like a boys' night, hang out, just laugh your ass off. Watch it multiple times to actually understand what's going on. Yeah. But it's a different story.
Watch it a bunch of times so they make a sequel and have me running through it.
Yes. Yes, that's the plan. Sequel's written. We got to get some eyeballs on the first one.
I love
it. And then me, I'm on Instagram, so, you know, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. Sean Stone, shouldn't be too hard to find. Real Sean Stone on Instagram, watching Sean on Twitter.
Awesome.
I mean, I exist in reality too, not just a social media person.
He's real.
I'm real. I promise. I keep it real.
I love it. Thanks again. Once again, my name is Razzle. You can follow me on Instagram at my name is Razzle too. Follow me on Twitter at my name is Razzle. I have a book on Amazon, Don't Be a Dick. Go buy that, tell all your friends too. And you know, if you come across something mildly interesting, let us know in the comments or shoot us a text or whatever, however you guys do it on the internet. And
I know some people that need your book for Christmas.
I love it.
Get some stocking stuffers.
Wonderful, it's great for Christmas and whenever that is. thanks again, Sean.
Thank you.
And as always, you know, the truth is out there.
It's here.
It's actually here.